news in today's Mumbrella podcast from the studios of CBS Interactive. Did Rupert Murdoch really mean it when he said that News Corp would come off the Google Index? The great Toyota social media experiment, how's it going? The end of the road for Merrick Rosso and Kate Ritchie, of course. Another turkey of an Aussie ad from an American agency. Plus, we talked to the man behind the launch of new children's channel, Kids Co. Welcome along. As ever, we have Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hello.
And Scott Rohde, who I always get confused as how to introduce him because he can never decide what to call his agency. Have we come up with a name yet?
We have indeed. Well, we have come up with a name for a few weeks now. We're just trying to get all the things sorted out.
An agency name that you can share with the outside world.
Well, I can share it with you, Tim.
Well, thank you. Do tell. It'll be our little secret.
So we're going to call the agency House Party, because we think that combines well with Hot House, the parent company, and the fact that being a social media and kind of digital PR agency, that kind of House Party gives you that feeling that you know, you want to go get together and have a laugh.
And Party has the words P&R in it, the letters P&R.
Exactly. It's got everything. It's a beautiful combination.
So you're not going to call yourself House Purity then, which I believe was on the cards.
It wasn't. House PRTY was on the cards, but House Party. And we'll have the website up hopefully next week. We'll have the kind of landing page and we're working on the rest of the design at the moment.
So one of the things you're working on is the Toyota Yaris social media campaign. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, just needs so many disclaimers. The fact that you're on this program doing this, so inherently and naturally biased against your competitors. But
well, I will not make a comment about any of my competitors.
Really?
On this
do
one.
You,
yeah.
Do you? Which is your favourite of your competitors? Ones?
I won't even mention that.
Really?
Look, all I can say is that, you know, the companies involved have all come up with really creative ideas. You know, and it's nice to be up against a field of such professionals.
Yeah, so amongst the agencies, and this is where I'm in horror of forgetting someone, we have One Green Bean and Host are working on the werewolf in Yaris. We have the population are sort of partnering with Oddfellows, and they're very much a Facebook-based one. Melbourne versus Sydney is the kind of central idea of that one. There's Such and Suchy are doing the film contest. Iris haven't said what they're doing yet, but that will come along soon. Oh, you know, don't you? We'll talk about that one.
I think I know. I've seen something online that looks like it could be them, but I'm not sure.
Okie dokie.
I've not had it confirmed. I just saw some recently and went, oh, that's a bit.
And then yourselves, you've worked with Balunty.
Yep.
Who is a YouTube blogger. Very briefly, what are you doing?
We're just doing, it was just a bit of a creative idea. So we wanted to do something a little bit fun and interesting. So we devised a concept of creating a Lego set where some criminals are broken out of jail and they need a getaway car, and they decide to quickly run through the exhaust pipe, come out through the air conditioned unit and steal the Yaris as our kind of getaway car. It was something fun and it was a way to connect people with the car and also just to give them an idea, you know, just a little bit of something that's a bit humorous, because I think that when you're working online a lot of the time, that's one of the key things is to make people laugh.
And then of course that then links into the Winner Yaris.
Yes, so yeah, we'll give the car away, what the heck.
Excellent. Now it's quite a nice little video, but Blunty did it.
Yep.
For you. Will you be entering it in the Such and Suchy film contest?
I hadn't thought of that, but now you mention it, that's quite a good idea. I'm sure they'd quickly say no to that. But
I believe you could win $7,000.
Do nice in my pocket.
Okay, that's the great Toyota social media experiment, something we'll be keeping our eye on in future weeks. Your first impressions of that one, Camille? The idea of a brand doing effectively a live pitch that the world can see.
I think it's a great idea. Let everyone watch it.
It's great for us journalists.
Absolutely. There's lots to talk about, so look forward to as it keeps on rolling out.
Okie dokie. Now, sad news is probably overstating the case, but one of those long-established radio relationships, Merrick and Rosso, is coming to the end of the road as far as radio goes. Now, Merrick and Rosso have co-presented on Nova for a while. Well, we're joined What feels like yesterday, but it's probably been more than a year, by Kate Ritchie.
That's what happens when you bring a threesome into a couple, all things can go wrong.
That's very good and very wise advice from a man who, I was going to say from a man who knows, but I really don't want to even begin to go there. I guess the question is if it was working brilliantly, then presumably the radio station would have moved hell and high water to keep them together. We don't know whether they chose to walk away or whether the radio station chose to keep them. You'd think that because Merrick and Rosser are so much of a lineup, the radio station would have wanted to keep that way. Camille, your take on this one?
It is very much a case of well-known duos, you know, kind of young Aussie talents that you wouldn't think that would ever break up, such as, you know, the Hamish and Andy to a lesser extent, but Merrick and Rosser, they've become a bit of an institution, you know, in the kind of younger audience landscape. So it
and
is
also on pay TV as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, television, because they've done some, they've launched shows in the past.
On the Comedy Channel, yeah.
Yeah, but also on free-to-air as well, which have
Not rated very well. Maybe, I think it was on Channel was 10, wasn't it, if yeah. I remember
and
rightly.
It was a Channel 9 one as well, actually. They've done several, because they've been together since 1996 and various collaborations, so lots of projects. You know, this isn't just this. So I don't. This is the end of a marriage, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
longer than a lot of relationships.
Yeah,
I know.
Absolutely.
Mind you, I mean, ratings-wise, they were never top of the tree, were they?
No, but they were consistent. I think that's the key.
Well, I thought they were actually higher than they are now. Compared to Today FM, but I have been out of the country.
Yeah,
years.
I mean, Today FM certainly has dominated breakfast for some time with Kyle and Jackie O. And please, let's not make this a Kyle and Jackie O conversation. and Kate Ritchie is going back, the announcement said, to her first love of acting, rather than presumably her second love of being paid an enormous amount for getting out of bed very early for the breakfast show every day.
It'll be interesting to see what she does next, actually.
Well, she did a bit of underbelly.
Yeah, but she was kind of synonymous, obviously, with Home and Away.
Yes.
Well, there'll be
so synonymous
return?
That you look puzzled as you try to work out Home Away or Neighbours.
It was Home and Away. I'm sure it is. But yeah, but she was, what age was she when she first started in that show? Like 8 or something like that? And then till like, in her 20s. I mean, that's one of the longest careers in any TV show I've seen.
Now, opinion piece that you wrote this week, Camille. Piece of advertising for Microsoft.
Oh yes, so Windows 7, the new operating system. Interesting, it was quite a big global launch, end of last month actually.
In which they did a dreadful video. Did you ever see the video they did to launch
party
it?
Video.
Yeah, so I was thinking, wasn't it called House Party, the video?
No, it was just called Microsoft Windows 7 Parties, all right?
And it was just agonising, people talking to the camera about...
It was like watching...
It was during the press launch.
This was ahead of that. This was sort of to try and persuade people they should hold their parties at home to celebrate the launch.
The greatest thing Microsoft ever did with that was disable comments straight off the bat, because that would have been destroyed. It was such a... I mean, it worked for the US audience, even though I'm not quite sure, but for a global audience, it was such a bad idea.
But another part of the strategy was their TV strategy.
Yeah, Crispin Porter, the lead creative agency, US agency, came up with a creative idea for the TVC, you know, it's my idea, Windows 7's my idea, using Microsoft consumers in their ads and saying that, fine.
Basically saying, there's something I really wanted and now it does it. I must be have thought of it.
Well, basically, this is just new and improved compared to their failure last time with the previous launch of the
Vista.
Yes. Mind you, that was perhaps more about the product rather than the advertising.
That's why the line comes out that I made it or whatever. What is it? It's so catchy, I can't even remember it.
Yeah,
it's
funny,
like, my idea.
I use Apple Macs, so I'll put a disclaimer out there. And, you know, the videos are like, oh, I thought of this. And I'm like, well, actually, I used that a couple of years ago on a Mac. So I didn't really think of it. You just witnessed your friend using that and thought, I'd be nice in my PC.
Absolutely. Now, I guess we need to explain, though, that in Australia, rather than, you know, get the local ad agency to shoot it, they no doubt at enormous expense sent out a Crispin Porter Bogusky crew to shoot the Aussie consumers.
Yeah, well, apparently they did that to all the markets, to localise it all. Crispin Porter's elite crack team of creatives flew into the markets and found some locals.
Holidays are go-go.
To say my idea, Windows 7 is my idea in the various accents. Was that necessary?
Well, it wasn't that special.
Watch the ad, and yes. You decide, basically.
Yeah, you can read Camille's opinion piece about it on Mumbrella and witness the video there. Now, also, it's not the first time that an American ad agency has been interested. Yeah, CommBank used Goodby Silverstein and Partners, San Francisco-based agency, I think, which has been going probably now for about 18 months or maybe even getting on for 2 years. Now, I must confess, I hated the ads. I thought they suck. I still think they suck. There was another new one on last night. The idea being, and you know, who knows where they got this crazy idea from, it's an American ad agency trying to tell the very clever marketing team at the bank what they should do, but the down-to-earth Aussies understand better. Now, I hate those ads. I still do. But I must admit, all of the marketing metrics seem to show that it's working.
Well, you know, that's says something about the audience there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? We can be very, you know, we can be very disdainful of a piece of advertising, and then it can work. And they were named Marketing Team of the Year based on, you know, very much the repositioning. Marketing director, a guy called Mark Buckman, you know, who's not stupid, and certainly is one of those people who actually stands for something in this industry. You've got to have a lot of belief, though, haven't you?
Yeah, I think sometimes we're all a bit too close to things. And, you know, we see much more than your average Joe sees in the street, or your average Bruce, or whatever it is in Australia. And I think, you know, maybe your average guy in the street sees the adverts and goes, yeah, that's the bank I want to use, or that's the PC operating system I want to use.
Camille, hate or love CommBank?
I don't. I'm a bit more indifferent, to be honest with you. I like the Bank West ones with the little, with the animals, the little mini pony. Make it smaller. The talking animals. I'm sorry. I think that's hilarious. It wouldn't necessarily convince me to go with Bank West, but I just they crack me up whenever I see it. Whereas the CommBank is just, it's kind of been done before. That kind of that brash American and trying to be, I don't know.
Mm. That's the thing about Camille, though. If it's fluffy, then you know. If it's cute, then that's the sort of advertising she likes.
That's me. I have no substance whatsoever.
Kidoki. Joining us now, Paul Robinson, Managing Director of KidsCo, which launches in the next few days here in Australia. Paul, tell us a bit about the station to begin with.
Well, we're a new channel coming to Australia. It's an ad-free kids channel for kids 6 to 10, being positioned as an environment that's safe for children. So if you're concerned about your children seeing things which may be a little bit racy in terms of some of the, you know, Hannah Montana sort of fairly, you know, not very many clothes on young ladies, or if you're concerned about violence or excessive sort of bad behaviour, malevolent behaviour, what you get with KidsCo is a safe environment, so there'll be nothing inappropriate. So all parents will be very happy for their children to watch KidsCo.
Now, one of the things, of course, is that the ABC, the national broadcaster here, are just about to launch far more programming for kids themselves, not to mention ABC3. Is there actually a need for you, or have you maybe arrived a bit late?
No, not at all. The key thing for us is we're about pay TV. We're supporting pay TV and believe in pay TV as a proposition for Foxtel and Austar. And if you look at those existing stations, there is a gap in provision in terms of what we're offering. No one else is offering the range, the quality, the depth of programming we're offering, or this environment. The ABC is clearly doing a different job. It's state funded and therefore has a responsibility to produce programming which is Australian, not to buy things from the market. What they should be doing is creating market failure, not doing what the commercial broadcasts are doing. So hopefully there's room for everybody.
Now, this is one question. Is it how much Australian content will you actually have?
We'll have relatively modest amount, probably around 10%. People like ACTF, Beyond, Southern Star are immediate providers of content, but that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to provide the very best of content from around the world. It's the ABC's purpose to provide Australian content. That's why they've got government funding.
Now, you've got some fairly major investors, partners in this. Who are the kind of key ones in terms of the studios?
Well, the company is a three-way joint venture between NBC, Universal, a company called Cookie Jar, who are a content company based in Los Angeles, and Nelvana Chorus, who are a Canadian broadcaster. But our providers of shows range from people like the BBC, BBC Worldwide, Sesame Workshop, Classic Media, really all the major independent kids content creators, about 15 or so of them, are providing shows for KidsCo. And these are shows that wouldn't otherwise be on the TV. Everything from Sonic the Hedgehog to Paddington Bear, you know, a great range of iconic characters. And also family movies. We're bringing back the family movie. So things like Mulan, Hunchback of Notre Notre Dame, Beauty and the Beast. These movies will be on Kidsco every night, so families can get together and watch them as a family in the TV, you know, on the sofa, curled up.
So for a fair chunk of your career, you've actually been in radio rather than television. What does that say about the future of radio that you've jumped in this direction?
Oh, my career's just been a total accident, basically. I started as a DJ in radio. I worked in commercial radio. Then I ran Radio 1, the BBC national pop station.
This is in the UK.
In the UK. And then Talk Radio, which is a talkback station in the UK, a national commercial station. And one day, the Walt Disney Company came calling and said, we'd like to come and work for us. I hadn't planned to go to Disney, but the rest is history. And that obviously brought me to Australia in business terms to work on Disney Channel.
Now, one of the interesting things in terms of radio is you've witnessed it firsthand in the UK, the birth of digital radio, which is a good 3 years ahead of us here in Australia. We launched digital here. It's been through some ups and downs. Having seen it firsthand, what do you see as the potential for digital radio? Is it ever going to work commercially?
Well, the challenge is that most people are very happy with their radio stations. And, you know, here in Australia, you've got a tremendous range of speech and music radio. And when you say to somebody, upgrade to a digital radio, they go, well, why would I do that? What's the benefit of that? Most radio sets last a long time. You know, the radio's fine. You know, I like my favourite station. Why would I possibly upgrade to digital radio? So the challenge is to create a consumer proposition that is compelling enough to get people to actually think about buying a digital radio. And in the UK, the problem was traditionally that the digital radios were more expensive than the analog ones. So again, why would I pay more for a set, for a service I don't know I need? What's happened is that the BBC, the equivalent of the ABC, and also the commercial stations have now created a whole raft of new digital stations, which didn't exist before, from speech, from rock to jazz and so on. So there's actually more to listen to on digital radio than to analog radio. So the challenge now is to actually market the benefits of that to consumers.
Because a few of them fell by the wayside in the process.
Right. Some did, because inevitably they couldn't fund it, you know, particularly in the commercial sector. When you've got a small audience, there's not enough there to actually attract advertising revenue. There are now about 5 or 6 million digital sets in the UK, and roughly a third of the population are listening to digital radio, but it's going slower than TV. And what everyone believes in the UK is required is a commitment to a digital switch-off date. You know, if you say to people, actually, your analog radio is going to go, that will motivate people then to do something about it. And it's sort of, it's a bit like shock tactics, but you need to have some sort of end game. Otherwise, it will just drift and drift.
So
and
switch off AM, switch off FM.
Yeah, yeah.
Both at the same time, do you think?
Probably FM will be later, because I think what's going to happen is that some of the community stations currently on AM will move to FM. So you'll have a raft of digital and FM rather than FM and AM as currently. And I think, you know, it is crazy to suggest that radio would not become digital like TV and every other medium. It can't stay as an analog medium. It just is getting people from analog to digital is tougher in radio. And it's also tougher because obviously radio is a free-to-air medium. You don't pay at point of consumption. You know, it's funded either by the state or by advertising. So, you know, it's very hard to get people to actually, as consumers, to invest in it, because they're just not used to paying for it.
Another story we've been talking about this week is the idea of giving school kids lessons in makeup, which I rather like. It's been much discussed.
You do look very good this morning yourself.
Well, yes, I just did that in the mirror myself, I have to say. Now, Camille, let's get your view on this one. Legitimate marketing tactic? Catch 'em young, catch 'em early.
Well, I mean, for me, it's more a case of realistically, teenagers, they wear makeup. That's the reality of it. So why not get in on the act and help kind of, not regulate it, but the fashion roll call, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's right.
Entertainment educational. Well, they're also bringing in Chadwick Models, White House Institute of Design, Girlfriend Magazine. So it's a whole raft of brands that are kind of coming on board and going into these schools.
Yeah, to put on, basically, it's a lunchtime fashion show.
Well, why
with
not?
The idea then being that you'll have a few lessons in how to do your makeup.
Well, I just think if you're going to wear makeup as a teenager, you might as well look good, you know, and let's be realistic about it. You know, they're not wearing makeup these days. They're doing a lot of things these days, so let's be realistic about it and be a bit proactive about it. Only thing I would say is maybe add a TV personality who's a nutritionist, for example, to be involved in this team, so that if you have a modelling agency and a makeup brand, then let's just balance it out a little bit.
Now, Scott, some of the comments thread has been fairly critical of, you know, reaching this captive audience of school kids a bit young.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the school should be the last bastion where children shouldn't be affected by brands. Obviously, ours, you know, kids will wear, you know, Nike trainers or they'll wear Reeboks or whatever. But I think that they should definitely, schools shouldn't allow this kind of thing.
Even if they get some educational value for free, which is the deal.
Do you honestly, I mean, really, they're not getting that kind of much education when it boils down to they're getting taught how to put makeup on, and if they're, you know, they should have parents who can do that. They've got YouTube that they can get taught
on. And they would defend themselves and say and prepare kids for a career in fashion, teaching them about styling and all of those things.
Yeah, that's brand messaging straight there. Look, you know, I come from all different sides when I talk in this show, but I think that schools and should be the place where kids should not be bombarded, and we don't want to go down the US route where you've got kids getting hit by advertising messages from every brand as they all try and buy their space in schools.
Paul Robinson from Kidsco, you don't take advertising, do you?
No, we've decided not to have advertising in Australia deliberately, so in fact there is no pester power to parents. You know, there is a real issue with parents, for example, maybe who have got more modest incomes, kids asking for toys or foods they don't want to particularly buy. So by not having ads on Kidsco, that gets rid of that issue. I think when it gets to teenagers, I think I probably take a slightly different view in that I believe that teenagers are pretty good at separating editorial from advertising, and they know when they're being sold to and they know when they're being editorialised to. I think this is just a harmless bit of promotion, really. I mean, it's not education. It's a cosmetic firm getting an opportunity to sell a bit of cosmetics and to maybe promote to the kids. I don't think there's any harm in that, as long as it's not overtly selling and as long as it's not to kids too young. I would say if they're under 12, I'd keep them innocent and keep them as kids. Beyond 12, they're really starting to become adults. They're in a commercial world. They're going to be exposed to these things anyway. I see no harm in it.
And Kidsco will never take advertising?
We will never take advertising in Australia.
Paul, good luck with the launch.
Thank you very much. Exciting. Nice to be here. Thanks very much for letting me join you.
On then we go to Mr. Rupert Murdoch. He was in Australia in the last few days, which if you looked at the Murdoch press, you couldn't have missed at all. There were exclusive interviews, specially exclusive interviews that get given to lots of different people in The Australian, in The Telegraph, on Sky News, which is partly a News Corp own thing. He had some interesting things to say, though, of which one of them was, I'm pretty sure the first time he's gone this far. He was asked by David Spears, and considering it's part of the News Family, I have to say it was a very good interview. He pushed him very, very hard.
Yeah.
But he asked that hard question of, okay, so if you don't like Google and content aggregators taking your content, stealing your content, why don't you put in the robots.txt message, which basically says, please don't index me on Google, and then the whole conversation is over. And he said, okay, we probably will. And that's the first time I've ever heard him go that far.
Yeah, I don't think he thought that went through.
Well, this is the question, is did he understand the question? Or does he mean it?
Yeah, I mean, that is it. I mean, you know, we don't know that one yet. I think if Google, if he gets every one of his companies to not be indexed on Google, it could have a disastrous consequence. Because a lot of people go through Google News, a lot of people just go through when they type in a search. And I found his comment where he said that people who, you know, come through search aren't looking for advertisers. I found that kind of bizarre.
That's what he said. Yes, that was slightly bizarre.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, I think what he was saying was the value of someone who reaches you, for want of a better word, randomly by search. You know, they're looking for a particular news story and you know, it could be one of 10 sites they go to. Tend to bounce away again. They may not be local. They're not interacting with the site in the same way with a committed user.
Yeah,
so to
then,
an advertiser, they might be worth less.
To a person who's going to drop onto it, say you're going to news.com, you're still only going to look at the certain stories that interest you. So in the same sense, that the homepage of news.com.au is still a search page to feed you to the news that you look for, the same way Google does, which is what I found bizarre. Because, you know, I might have went through to news.com through a different route as usual, but when I get there, I might go, oh, that's another interesting story I haven't read. And then I'll look at another one, I'll look at another one. So to say that, I find is quite strange.
Yeah, I guess the question comes, you know, I suppose the other possibility as well as did he not understand the question is it just an enormous bluff, part of the negotiation that's going on with Google?
No, possibly not. I also saw that Google responded in the UK earlier this morning, and they were like, well, on you go, basically.
Yeah.
So I think it's not going to be definitely it's one versus the other in this kind of battle of publishers. I mean, Google's ultimate online publisher and Murdoch's ultimate offline publisher in this battle. It's a good time to be alive watching this battle kind of take place.
It is. Now, so coming off the fence, and actually in fairness, you're not yet on the fence, Camille, will we see it happen?
Look, I think he said it because he could, you know, because he's Rupert Murdoch, basically. I can't see it being an immediate issue. I think it's more, at the moment, all eyes are on the online paid content strategy work, and then that really is the initial issue for them. I can't see it happening. I don't know. I can't see it happening.
Well, I just think that at the moment you see him attacking the BBC and the ABC a lot, and obviously the strategy behind that is to try and get them as little funding as possible so that people have to go to his paid content sources rather than... Because if a free news service is available online, then that's where people will go.
It's a debate that's going to continue for many months yet to come, which depresses me intensely. Anyway, on that slightly downbeat note, that's where we have to leave it for today. Our thanks to Paul Robinson as our guest for today, to Deputy Editor of Mumbrella, Camille Alacon. Thank you.
Thank you.
To Scott Rohde of House Party PR. Thank you. Our thanks also to all of the guys at CBS Interactive for lending us their studios. I'm Tim Burrows, and that was the Mumbrella Podcast. ¶¶